What's happening today, boys?
Not much.
I saw your stupid tweet to Marcellus Wiley, and
I loved it. I loved it.
You just had to do the stupid eyeballs, and that's how you roll.
Yeah, yep. Defend yourself, Hayes. Tell me, I mean, tell the people who are listening who didn't see the tweet.
Noodles,
what did you do?
The defense has rested, my friend. There's no defending. Case dismissed. Defense rests. I mean, the whole nine, all right? So there's a very reputable, I mean, basically the Bible of football, little website called Pro Football Focus at PFF on Twitter. Let me read their bio quickly. Premium data and analytics to all 32 NFL teams. All right, so essentially this is all you need to know. Like, we can talk about the eye test all we want. When it comes to the real stuff, the analytics and grading everybody.
So you're not on team eye test anymore.
No, I never have been. When it comes to this conversation, I'm very analytically driven. I love the numbers. I push the numbers. I'm a proponent of the numbers. So Pro Football Focus, they grade every player in football. Right, and they have a grade for every specific position. We see it all the time. Every left tackle is rated 1 through 32 or 1 through 64. The guards, the linebackers, and obviously the quarterbacks as well. And Pro Football Focus, they have the highest graded quarterbacks of 2020. Number one, Aaron Rodgers, 93.1. Yeah. Number two is Patrick Mahomes, who's had a fine season. He's a fine player. He's at 92. And Russell Wilson's at 91.6. Those have been the three best quarterbacks all year. But eye test would tell you it's close. The analytics would tell you it's actually not that close.
You can take your
Aaron Rodgers is the man right now.
Your PFF documents and take them in a car and drive them out to Kelowna to that Tim Hortons and put them on the ground in front of the cashier and let our friend do her business on it. Because that's what I think of that.
You have
wall
no
squat.
Time for the analytics. The wall squat, wow. Deuce and toss on Pro
and
Football Focus.
And it's just like, already told you, two people inside the NFL circles, one we had on yesterday, the other one we're having on today from Pro Football Talk, a real website. The other one is coming on today. They both said it's a landslide, Patrick.
Okay, well, we'll see what happens. Yeah, I'll have to supply some fact-based analysis, and we'll see how they want to respond to that. But what we do know is Carson Wentz is not going to be up for the MVP.
No.
And the Eagles are a mess.
That a tough go?
That was tough last night.
What can you say? What happened to him? I thought when the Philadelphia Eagles won the Super Bowl, they beat New England, I thought, these guys are going to be sitting into a similar position that Kansas City is in right now, where it's like they're locked and loaded with their stud QB. This guy is the next Aaron Rodgers, and they are going to go on a tear here. And from that moment on, it's just he's never got it together. You talk about a regression. I don't know if I've ever seen anything like it. Like
that
some
was a deer in the headlights last night. It's tough to watch.
Like some quarterbacks, Ryan Leaf, they just show up and it's not good right from the get-go. But this guy, his first couple of years in the league, was dialed in. And it's invisible. It's like he can't even play the position anymore.
That pick he threw to...
Was that not something else?
No.
And he didn't even really respond. He's like, gee, shucks. See you later, guys.
That was almost like, I don't know, who was it that, was it last year said, I've seen ghosts? That was Darnold. Basically, he saw his own player there, but his player wasn't there.
Right.
And he laid it right in the numbers.
Unfortunately,
the wrong team.
I've never seen a member of the defense pick off somebody, basically take a knee, and then because they're so wide open, they start running out of the end zone and then say, wait a minute, this is a touchback. I got to go back to the end zone. There was not an Eagle within 15 feet. And obviously someone made a mistake. I'm assuming it was Wentz, but I think it was the tight end who went left, and Wentz thought he was either going to continue to go straight or go right. But Carson Wentz is a shell of his former self right now, and a lot of it is the offensive line, maybe a lack of weapons, maybe the coaching staff doesn't happen or doesn't help, but he is an awful quarterback right now. But I would caution the Eagles from shipping him out before you have a plan B. You know, finding a quarterback is not the easiest thing to do. And he has proven in the past he's got talent. He has proven in the past he is capable of winning. He's a pretty tough quarterback, even though he has suffered a lot of injuries early into his career. But unless they've got, you know, a backup that's ready to go, and I don't know if Jalen Hurts is that guy, they got to be careful with just shipping him out for the sake of it.
Aren't they close to thinking to themselves, plan B, whatever that may be, plan B, C, or D, has got to be better. They're close to thinking it's got to be better than what's going out there on the field right now.
Well, it can't get much worse.
No, it can't be far away from being at that particular point where they're watching it, and it's like it just can't get worse than this. This is some of the worst quarterbacking that's ever been seen. So how do we get worse?
Well, that's what I'm saying, though. It does look awful right now. It is awful right now, but there can be worse if you think Jalen Hurts is the guy and he's not. Or, you know, you try to pick up Sam Darnold in the offseason. Let's say he's available, and we think he likely will be. Who's to say Sam Darnold really knows how to play at the National Football League level? He has not proven that at any point, albeit with an awful situation, terrible environment, terrible atmosphere, brutal coaching staff, brutal management. I mean, the Jets are what they are. Right. But I'm not convinced that Darnold is just going to figure it out.
No, we're talking about a professional athlete that went on the field and said he was seeing ghosts.
That hurts, man.
That hurts.
That'll
man.
Hurt it's your reputation.
Like, exactly.
Yeah, that was tough.
But that backdoor cover was the story of the night. Like, that was the most outrageous and gutless gambling loss of the season, and there have been a lot of them. Right, a couple of weeks ago, there was that Bills-Arizona finish that was crazy. There was another one where a team took a knee, I think, or was it Kareem Hunt? That's what it was the Browns. Yeah. He was going to take it to the house to cover the number, and he ran out of bounds at the one. There have been just a bounty of bad beats. That is the worst one, and I don't think it's even close because Carson Wentz was playing, you know, I don't know what that was. He just lobbed it into the air, and Rodgers catches it, touchdown, okay, fine. There's no need. The math does not suggest you should go for two. And they go for two, they convert, and they lose by six and cover the 6.5. So Al's brother loses again.
He's starting a fresh new cooler sensation. Yeah.
He is. And big story online before the game last night was someone in Vegas put $500,000 on Seattle to win and cover the number at 6.5.
Wow.
And to watch that transpire with 500 large on the line would just – it would put you into shock.
Oh,
I think you'd just go into shock. You'd start just – you'd go into a coma.
But they're not sitting there going, okay, we got – like they know the – do you know – do you think players know the spread going in?
I think a lot of them do,
and
but
coaches,
I don't
– they don't care.
It's the coach's call. It's not up to the players to go for two. I doubt Doug Peterson saying, let's cover the number.
Right.
Know? I can't tell you what the explanation was. There wasn't enough time on the clock for them to kick two field goals to tie
right.
it.
Right. So what other reason?
I think it's just you
to practice that play.
No, but in your mind, you try and get as many points as possible. If you lose by six, it's better than losing by eight.
Maybe.
You know what I mean? Like in your mind, losing in hockey 3-2 instead of an empty netter at 4-2, it looks like the game is closer. That's the only thing I could think of. When you're trying to just get as much points as possible on the board, is hey, we got an opportunity for two here instead of one. A loss by six at the end of the year looks a lot better than a loss by eight when
maybe,
they start
maybe
going
it was a
through
moral
the
victory, like a right. moral victory. Let's punch in another, you know, 2-point right. conversion to kind of go out feeling a little bit better
make
about
it
ourselves.
Make it look a little better on paper. This guy's got to go on the radio today.
He does. Doug Peterson, I'm sure, is on the radio down at Philly. The
right.
same poll question is probably being asked. Who is the biggest disaster with the Eagles? 74% voting the head coach, Doug Peterson.
It's
not good down there with Philly, but even with that loss, they didn't lose any ground. They're still just chugging along in the NFC East, and the Giants and Washington are currently at 4-7. The other teams, I guess Dallas is 3-7, and Philly's 3-6-1. So we've got a barn burner in the NFC East, and someone's going to get in. So we'll catch up with Joe Thomas in about 15 minutes. And Joe Thomas, all-pro with Cleveland forever, working with the NFL Network. We had him on before the year. We asked him about Baker Mayfield versus Jared Goff.
Yeah.
Probably revisit that conversation, and we'll catch up with him in about 15. But some very surprising news as far as I was concerned today that Greg Vanney is out at TFC. And the reports indicating, and based on the press conference, the indication was that Greg Vanney stepped down. That was what the press release announced. And the reporting, I believe Christian Jack tweeted this out earlier, that the two sides were talking about a contract during the season, and there was a contract believed to be available to Greg Vanney that I guess he never signed. And either he decided, I'm out, it's not enough, or I've got another option, which I kind of feel might be a part of the program here, or Toronto FC decided we have to go in a different direction, and they're being amicable here, and the old mutually disagreed or mutually agreed to part ways, step down, whatever it is, it's all semantics. The fact is, Greg Vanney, who is the only coach of record in the history of this team that has any track record, any reputation.
Yeah.
You know,
any
there's
success.
Been countless coaches over the years. No one cares about any of them. Exactly. They could walk into my house right now and be like, who the hell are you? But Greg Vanney is a guy who won.
Yeah.
He finally got it done, and he's out. In this era of success with Jovinko and Vanney and Bezbachenko and Tim Lywicki, they're all gone. And they've left at various times over the past couple of years, but they're all out. And I wouldn't be surprised if Altidore and Bradley are not far behind. It's a very different era in Toronto FC history now moving forward.
You have to wonder if they're, you know, for lack of better words, blowing it up and looking to head in different directions, right?
Well, that's what Vanny's probably got to be thinking. It's like, now's maybe time for me to go exit stage left, maybe go on to greener pastures somewhere throughout the league, or some kind of different opportunity. Or they got on a bird after that loss, and it was like, this is just not happening again. So it's one of the two scenarios. He just told, don't even think about coming back because that's enough. Or he actually made the decision, I'm moving on here, I got different things. And I couldn't you kind of tell just listening to him the last couple of years, it might have seemed a little bit tired. Not of the team, not of the players, but just of the whole scenario where it was just, I don't know, that's the sense I got.
Well, he did cite that, I believe, like, you know, it's been exhausting. But I find that hard to believe. I mean, you're a coach, and that's what comes with the program.
Well, yeah, I mean, what, you know? Are you surprised at that, that it's taxing, it's stressful?
Yeah, like you played a lot of games and you had a lot of success. Like, there's a lot of losing coaches that would love that level of exhaustion.
Yeah,
you know, playing in Champions League, playing in MLS Cup Finals. I think he's smarter than that. Like that, this leads me to believe, this is my two cents from afar, is he's got something else cooking.
Yeah, I was just
He's got, and I would think he'd be a highly sought after coach. He should be. He's been very successful. I don't know where that would be. He's an American. I would think he's going home. Where that is, I guess we'll find out down the road. But this feels like, you know, Vanny saying, I'm gonna move on, and I have to give some sort of a reason. And I'm going to cite, it's been a long road, it's been tough, it's been exhausting. But coaches generally don't want to give off that vibe. You know, the I need a break vibe doesn't come up a lot. It does when you're forced out, and then you have an op, like Mike Babcock's like, okay, I'll take a paid leave and sit around for a while and reset. But when you have the opportunity to stay, and you're in the midst of your prime as a coach, which is what he is, how many guys are just like, I've hit a wall and I have to leave? For a while, it doesn't happen very often.
Well, if he didn't have a contract for next year, and there was something being worked on, and he didn't sign it, then I agree with you, Hayes. I think there's something else on the back burner where he's like, yeah, there's an opportunity here. Maybe it's closer to his family, closer to something.
Maybe he wanted to get paid, Jamie. Maybe they wanted to get paid, and they didn't want to pay him, and he just said, I'm not signing that garbage, so don't even think about it. If you don't get it to this number, I'm walking.
Well,
there's a whole bunch of different scenarios. Exactly. Unless you're Vanny or TFC, you don't really know exactly what happened.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are some insiders around the team, whether it be KJ or Caldwell or any of them, but those are the three different scenarios. It's like, you know, bad loss, that's it, or I want it out, I want greener pastures, or I couldn't come together on a number for the contract.
Yeah, and maybe he and Ali Curtis, the new GM, don't see eye to eye. You know, like there's a lot of potential possibilities.
Sure. Maybe a combination of all of them.
It could be. Absolutely. And his contract was up. He has the right to step down and move. And he's not going to be out of work for long if he doesn't want to be.
Right.
Greg Vanney's had a great run. But I think if you're a sports fan in Toronto, again, Toronto FC was an afterthought for a long time. They were just a dismal operation for the longest time. Like they just could not stop shooting themselves in the foot coach after coach, manager after manager, year after year. They lose and lose and lose, and they still had, you know, a core level of support. But that support has grown exponentially over the past 4 or 5 years, in large part because of Lywicki when he first got here, and the hiring of Bezbachenko, the hiring of Vanny, the courtship of Jovinko and Bradley and Altidore, and a lot of those main pieces, the pillars of success, are gone.
Yeah.
They're gone. And that's going to lead to, I think, some nervousness, some trepidation about what's going to happen in the future.
Well, if the coach goes and they haven't had a lot of success here, just I'm just talking recency bias, it signals to me like there's some turnover coming up here.
Yeah, you're going to have wouldn't be shocking that this would be the time to do it.
Exactly. And that's, you know, that's when you start to think, okay, well, maybe there is a reset coming or that type of thought process. So you're going to move away from the coach. The new coach is going to bring in some of his guys, and then he may have some players that he wants to target. Like, it could be a changing of the guard here a little bit for TFC. Like you said, they've been a staple for success and class for the last little while, for sure. And, you know, it might be a scenario where they got to take a step back to move forward again.
Well, exactly. And I'm just seeing this. Someone sent this tweet to me, Grant Wall, who worked for SI forever. I'm not sure where he is now. But he's as connected in the American soccer scene as you can possibly find. He quote tweeted a few hours ago, Greg Vanney stepping down by Toronto FC. And then he followed this up by saying, Greg Vanney leaving Toronto. LA Galaxy has yet to fill its coaching vacancy.
Yeah.
And Vanney is a former member of the Galaxy. So yeah. That's what I see. Like, that wouldn't shock me at all. I did not see that earlier, but now that makes a lot of sense to me.
For sure.
He's got a plan.
Go to Kansas City. Go to Kansas City. We've had enough of our guys. Kawhi went out there. Serge is out there. Gasol's out. Just go to Kansas City or something.
I know. I
mean, we'll forget about you, and that's it.
Don't you kind of wish the Raptors didn't go to Tampa? Like, why didn't they go to, you know, somewhere in, like, northern Ohio? Or go to North Dakota or something like that.
Oh, I know. I hope they don't, like, put it in our faces as Raptors fans and people that cover the team, how they're, like, the Instagram going off the charts.
They're doing it, man.
Life.
They're doing
what?
It. Bobby Webster, who's going to join us at 5, and we will address this with him. He said in the last hour, he was doing a Zoom call with the media.
I don't want to see it.
I don't want to see it either.
Loving life down in the sun. No, I can't take it.
I don't want to hear it.
Take a look outside your window.
Tell
right
your
now.
Players.
Would you rather
exactly.
Go to Tampa?
We're aware of that. They should be up here being miserable, too.
Don't disrespect
Bobby should be
us.
Miserable like us.
Good on them. Good on you, Bobby. Look out the window because there's a palm tree and a pool. I'm looking out right now, and there's a snowdrift and a storm.
That's what he referenced. He said, I'm pretty sure it's snowing back in Toronto. Like, we don't want to hear that.
No, I think it's a factor, man. Like, you talk about the rumors last year, and this would have to be a factor, that Kawhi did not have a winter jacket, period. Which
well,
I find hard to
like,
believe. Like he's got to travel to all these cities throughout the season. You're telling me there was no winter jacket? But if you're just not familiar with this weather whatsoever, the Cleveland Browns were taking videos today of the snow and getting to practice, and they were like, screw this, man. If you're not familiar with it, you're not familiar with it, and you're not going to like it. If I was brought up in Florida, I wouldn't come up here. No
well,
way.
It's a different world.
Well, it's not like you can't adapt as a human being, though.
No,
I mean,
but...
Just like Jamie said, think about being down in Tampa right now, going for a Sea-Doo ride.
It'd be awesome.
Before
it'd be awesome.
You start the show. I looked outside and just looked at snow all day. Can't go anywhere. Trapped inside. It sucks.
But we would be doing our show if we were in Tampa right now. We could probably get together and social distance a show.
Jamie, yeah,
outside
at a sports bar.
Leo Routon's house.
No, at a sports bar.
Down there, we'd be in studio, dude. Yeah. If we weren't in studio, we would be laughed out of the building.
You're right.
So
but
let's
I,
not,
I'm just
don't
saying.
Bring up that social distance thing and associated with Florida. That
if we're
apply.
Being mindful of our health, all I'm saying is that, you know, with options, we could do that. We could do that. We had a great summer here. You know, let's not forget, like, Toronto is beautiful in the summer. Canada, I have no problem living here.
It was.
It was a great summer. You guys golfed up until what? Last week, Hayes?
So what?
Yeah,
it doesn't take away the pain of getting, I had to take my car in today. driving out to Oakville in that weather, it's just, it's terrible, man.
No, and that's what I'm saying. We get it. We're all, the three of us are Canadian. We've lived here our whole lives. I mean, you guys have scattered around the states and stuff, but we get it. We know it. We understand it. But I don't want to hear every day, like, hey, what's up back there in Toronto? Oh, we're down here in shorts and a tee. It's awesome. Like, I don't want to hear it.
Okay, what's the hashtag? What's the hashtag that will piss you off? New home, new team, or like one of the guys saying hashtag office all year?
No, hashtag like sun every day. Sun's out.
Hashtag no snow. Hashtag no snow.
Yeah. Any of those comments, and it's gonna happen. It's just a matter of time. Someone will let it slip that they feel like they should split time between Toronto and Tampa in the future permanently.
Oh, somebody's gonna go on TikTok and say, "How about we just move to franchise?"
Yeah, that's coming, and you can bank on it. So Bobby Webster at 5:05. We'll have a man conversation with Bobby about not throwing the weather in our face up here. We'll get into a number of things with him. Ray's coming up at 5:30. Joe Thomas, longtime Cleveland Brown and NFL Network analyst, will join us on the game last night. What does Philly do with Carson Wentz in the future? And there are some reports out there, some people sniffing out a Matt Patricia burner account. Could be true. Maybe it's not. But we'll investigate ourselves. Overdrive will continue. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. Raptors officially down in Tampa, and camp is off and running, and the season is going to be here before you know it. So there's a lot to get into with Bobby Webster. But the NFL, I guess we're still technically in week 12 because there's a game tomorrow at 3:40 p.m. Eastern time. And the reason for that is because of the tree going up at Rockefeller Center. You guys hear about that yesterday? Like NBC had to knock off a massive primetime football game because of a tree. So that one hurts for the NFL. I never thought I'd see the day.
Well, NFL is usually such a power. I mean, they run the show.
They generally do, and obviously NBC, I'm sure, was thinking we'd get more ratings from the football game, but maybe tradition trumps all. I don't know. Yeah. But the tree wins. The tree wins over football. Here's a longtime NFLer, longtime Cleveland Brown, and one of the best in the business on the NFL Network here is Joe Thomas. How you doing, Joe?
I'm doing good, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thank you for doing this. Obviously, the chatter around the NFL today is revolving around the Philadelphia Eagles and just how ugly it's become down there. And Carson Wentz is officially in whipping boy mode. Do you jump on that train? Is it all on Wentz, or how do you evaluate what's gone wrong in Philly?
Well, anytime you got a quarterback that's not playing well, it's not always the quarterback's fault. A lot of it's the scheme and the coaching. Because the quarterback position is so much about decision making and being put in the right decisions to execute. Obviously, Carson deserves a good bit of the blame because his decision making hasn't been good. He's been taking sacks. He's been throwing interceptions. And largely, there's been a lot of injuries on the Eagles. But if you want to point to one thing that's caused them to lose the number of games that they've lost, it's play at the quarterback position, whether that be taking the sacks, throwing the pass where it shouldn't be thrown. And I think it's fair to start saying, hey, man, maybe Carson Wentz isn't the long-term answer at quarterback that maybe we thought he was a couple years ago.
So in saying that, what kind of timeline are they going to put this guy on? How many more games are they going to march him out there and watch this nonsense and before they pull the pin on him?
Well, I think us as NFL fans, you know, we always want to be drastic because it's more fun to be drastic and dramatic, and I'd fall into that just as much as anybody. But when you're talking about the quarterback position, most important position in all of sports, you got to look at what is my option? What are my alternatives? And a lot of times when you're talking about the quarterback position, you don't have alternatives. Yeah, they've got Jalen Hurts there, but I think the people in that building have probably seen a little bit from Jalen so far this season, and they're not sure. They definitely aren't sure that he is going to be a better option. But also, I think it's important to remember that Carson Wentz was an MVP candidate just a few years ago, and I think the Eagles were feeling pretty good about him as their long-term answer at quarterback. And so before I do anything at quarterback, I would try to make sure that the coaching situation is right, because it's a lot easier to find a coach than it is to find a quarterback. So I think urging some patience at the quarterback position is important. It's prudent. But if there is a change that's going to be made, I think it should be made at that coaching position, whether that be the offensive coordinator, head coach, quarterback coach. somewhere in there, because I think a couple more games like we've seen, and I think they do need to look at maybe shaking things up a little bit on that offensive side of the football.
With longtime NFLer, NFL Network analyst Joe Thomas, DK Metcalf went off last night. He's been going off all year and really throughout his career. It's his second year in the league, and he's put up massive numbers. And he is in the conversation as, you know, maybe the most dominant wideout in the game. I think I'd probably put Hopkins ahead of him. I think I'd put Adams ahead of him. I might put Tyreek Hill ahead of him, but he's in that chatter. Do you have him in the top three or four wideouts in the league? And he's starting to get compared to Megatron. Could you see that being a part of his future, where he just puts up massive numbers and dominates the NFL for an extended period of time?
Yeah, I definitely think he needs to be in that conversation of one of the top three guys, because you look at the Seattle Seahawks, they've got a terrible defense. They've got an outstanding generational quarterback, and the number one target that he's been thrown to is DK Metcalf. He's the consistent, and even though defenses know where the ball is going to go, he's been so dominant, you can't shut him down, even with double teams and even with some of the rolling and coverage that they're trying to do to try to take him away. So I think when you look at that, you got to say he's one of the most dominant, most impactful receivers in the game. I think right now, if you said, hey, would you rather have Tyreek Hill or DK Metcalf? I still would say Tyreek Hill because of what he did last week.
And just, yeah.
That speed is nearly impossible to limit. And the way that even when he doesn't get the ball, he is creating separation in the secondary by taking the top off the defense, by running downfield, grabbing that coverage, and he opens everything else up for everybody on the field. Now, DK Metcalf is very similar, and you know, maybe down the line, as he continues to develop as a receiver, he might overtake Tyreek Hill. But I think right now, I still think it's Tyreek Hill. Then I would say DK Metcalf, and I love DeAndre Hopkins, but he doesn't have the ability to go down the field quite as much as a DK Metcalf or a Tyreek Hill. And I think those guys that catch those deep passes are more impactful on the game than those intermediate and short catching receivers, those slot receivers, those guys like Hopkins, who are more well known for being reliable underneath than they are down the field.
With Joe Thomas. So we got a ball game tomorrow. We were referencing prior to you coming on. I think the NFL got bumped for a tree tomorrow night. So the game's going to be at 3:40 p.m. in Pittsburgh. And the line is out of control, which is not surprising at all. I think it's Steelers like -10.5. And it feels like the Ravens are obligated to show up, lose, and move on, and then hope they can beat Dallas next Tuesday. But as it currently stands, they're in tough in the AFC. They're clearly not going to catch the division leader. I'm not sure they can keep up with your Browns. If you were putting your own money down as of today, would you bet on the Ravens making the playoffs or missing the playoffs?
Well, if I'm betting today, I think they missed the playoffs, because they are dealing with this crazy COVID situation right now, where they've had like two walkthroughs in the last basically 2 weeks, so they haven't really practiced a lot. You really lose your rhythm and your flow when you have these long extended breaks, and then they're going to have to come back and play a Wednesday afternooner and then turn around again and play Dallas on Tuesday. Really screws up any type of rhythm that you can try to get into. Lamar Jackson has really been struggling in the last 6 or 7 games. He's not done a very good job. His pass rating has been really low. He's struggled historically against the Steelers. They are a high blitzing percentage team. They've been able to affect Lamar Jackson. They've been able to get him off his spot and force him to throw from outside the pocket. But also they've done a good job of getting him outside the pocket and then not allowing him to make some of those big plays with his feet. So the Steelers have really been kryptonite on Lamar Jackson. So I don't think they win this game. And the AFC's tough. I think you got to get to 10 or 11 wins to be able to get one of those wild card spots, because you do have this large glut of teams that are kind of not going to win their division, but still going to win 10 or 11 games. Like you mentioned, the Browns, potentially the Dolphins, the Colts. I mean, there's a bunch of teams that are going to be right there. And so falling behind and going to 6-5 after this Steelers game does not look very good for the Ravens, especially the way they've been playing. I mean, they've always been able to count on their defense playing pretty good, but even their defense has struggled in recent memory. So unless something crazy changes on Wednesday afternoon, the big rivalry there between the Steelers and the Ravens, I just don't see how they're able to get things back on track and still make the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. We're chatting with longtime NFLer Joe Thomas. your Browns are they're picking up wins. I mean, they made it tough on themselves on Sunday against the Jags, but a win is a win is a win, and they're only two
win
is a win for the boys when you've got them in the survivor pool in Week 12. But there are only two quarterbacks in the NFL that did not throw a pick through the month of November. One of them was Deshaun Watson, who was putting it back together after a horrible start, and by the end of the year is going to have, I think, a great stat line. The other is Baker Mayfield. And when we had you on back in, I think, late August, early September, we posed a question to you asking who you think is going to have a better year, Baker Mayfield or Jared Goff. And we promised to get you on at the end of the season, so this is not complete. This is just kind of a Week 12 breakdown based on where your head currently stands on this topic. And we'll have to do it again in about a month, month and a half when everything is complete here. But let's revisit that topic. Based on what we've seen through 12 weeks, who has had a better season so far, Baker Mayfield or Jared Goff?
Well, as much as Baker has had a up and down season, in recent memory, I'm feeling pretty good about Baker Mayfield.
Baker.
We heard Sean McVay coming out over the weekend. He wasn't exactly defending Jared Goff as this quarterback that he loves. So I think at this point, Jared has still had a better season than Baker, but the way the needles are headed, I feel pretty good about coming back on in January sometime and somebody owing me a few Labatt Blues. That's all I'm saying right now.
Yes, sir. I like it. All right. That's all we needed to hear. Go ahead.
No. Let's get to something that's actually relevant and important in the NFL. Fill in this blank because we had a healthy debate yesterday and it was a simple one. Somebody on Sunday put a stranglehold on the MVP. Who in the NFL for you would that be? Fill in the blank.
You got to say Patrick Mahomes. I've been on the Aaron Rodgers the MVP bandwagon for a while.
Thank you.
And he
Thank
played
you,
great.
Joe.
But what Patrick Mahomes has done right now, he has firmly planted Kansas City as the best team, the team to beat in the NFL, putting up outrageous numbers. And really, when you look at that offense, there's really no way you can limit them. You can't blitz Patrick Mahomes. You can't sit off on Patrick Mahomes. There's nothing you can do to slow him down. And then their defense is actually playing pretty well. If Patrick's behind, he's going to catch up. If they're ahead, they're just going to put the gas down even further and throttle you. So I think right now Patrick Mahomes has a stranglehold. And unless something crazy happens down the stretch here, I think he wins the MVP.
And what happens, Joe, is people like the guy that is my host here, they get tired of the greatness. They get bored with it, and they have to go sniffing around for something else.
Yeah,
that's
Aaron Rodgers is an undrafted.
I'm not saying that,
squad,
but you're completely discarding.
He's Ben DiNucci. Aaron Rodgers is Ben DiNucci. He's greatness before Mahomes was even in high school.
Joe, you know what I'm saying. People just forget about the greatness, and they start sniffing around for something else, which gets you in trouble.
I hear you. I mean, it's hard to argue that Bill Belichick was the greatest coach of the last 20 years, but he still didn't win Coach of the Year every year, even though he probably did the best job when you think about it, because you just get sick of voting for the same guy all the time. You get sick of the greatness. So I understand a little human nature. That's okay, guys.
All right. Well, listen, everyone's entitled to their own opinion, and there's still a lot more runway here to see how it all plays out. And I think the favorite in Vegas is clearly Mahomes. That's not a shock by anybody. But Rodgers, I think, is lurking. And I think the narrative that I expressed yesterday continues to pop up. And the underlying analytics would suggest old number 12 up in Wisconsin's putting on a clinic. But we'll see. And we'll get you back on for Baker v. Goff and see what happens the rest of the way here. Always great catching up with you. Thank you for doing this, Joe.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. I'm looking forward to that January date. I'm getting thirsty already.
You got it, buddy. We'll make sure to send him. There he is, Joe Thomas, longtime NFLer, all-pro left tackle and NFL Network analyst.
So now we've had Marcellus Wiley on Mahomes, Inner Circles NFL, Joe Thomas, Mahomes, and my buddy Carl from the NFL Network will be joining us later in the show. Another NFL insider, and I guarantee you he'll say Mahomes.
Well, of course he will, because we're talking about sheep. you know, sheep, everyone's just following, you know, the leader here, and everyone's just saying that Mahomes is the guy. And Mahomes has had a spectacular year. But Pro Football Focus, which is the Bible of football analytics, has rated Aaron Rodgers as a more productive quarterback this year.
So, take it right to Kelowna, right into the Tim Hortons.
Yeah. That's fine. I hear you, man. We'll see.
Statistically, listen, he's right there.
He's right there. That's all I'm saying. He's right there, and I think the narrative, which I laid on the line yesterday, I think is going to go a long way. That the draft, what happened with the draft, the fact that no weapons were added, the fact that Mahomes has got Tyreek Hill, who might be the best wideout in the league, although Devontae Adams, I think, is right there. But
Do you think
Andy
established
Reid,
voters care about the sad face when the draft went down?
Of course. I think I think intangibles factor in from time to time.
Not everybody's into the content game like you are, okay?
Some
people are just established voters with credibility. They don't care about the content game. Sad faces, Instagram posts, going on a radio show saying another quarterback's bad or one of my bad seasons is another quarterback's great seasons. Speaking of quarterbacks, and you were chirping Ben DiNucci, I think our boy Jerry down in Dallas had a chirp for Benny too.
Yeah, he did. He did his weekly.
It was
radio
awful.
Hit.
It's so unnecessary. It was asked about Denver having to play that quarterback, and he basically came out and says that's like our boy Jerry DiNucci. And how does that make
Do you want to hear it? We have the clip.
Oh, yes, I'd love to.
The owner, the GM, the president, the water boy, super fan, Jerry Jones, on his weekly radio hit down in Dallas. This is what he said this morning.
You take risks when you put all the quarterbacks in the same room. If you were worried about those things, you can spread them out a little bit. You can not even you can save one. I don't know that that Denver had any more of a challenge than we've had with DiNucci or with the young quarterbacks that we've had.
Kendall Hinton is a wide receiver on the practice squad. Ben DiNucci is a quarterback that Jerry Jones personally drafted, and he said it's the exact same challenge.
That's
a tough one.
How do you feel?
Oh, that
that's
hurts,
so gutless.
And how do the boys not chirp him a little bit when he – like, how do you not start calling him Kendall in the room, especially as a rookie? Yeah. You know DiNucci is going to take some heat.
Oh, for sure. That is tough.
Yeah.
That is tough.
That
and
hurts.
That's the owner. Just shooting from the hip. That's what he thinks of him, too.
Exactly.
That sucks.
I was sick when you had to play quarterback for my team because I knew we were going to lose.
Yeah.
That's basically what he said.
Good.
There's some investigations going on online about a potential burner account for Matt Patricia, which I love the burner account.
I love
it. It's the greatest.
You talk
game.
About the Halloween music. If you had that burner account, like Colangelo in Philadelphia, when you know that your burner accounts are going down and everything's being documented, you talk about Halloween music, that is playing loud in your head when if you get busted.
Yeah, the Colangelo story is still one of the most
incredibly
groundbreaking, multi-layered debates, conversations, content makers in the history of the show.
Like, dude, that was Horatio Caine type stuff. Putting
it was
all
crazy.
The whoever that investigative journalist was that tracked back to different comments, different kind of locations, the kid.
Who they're following.
Following and different stuff. It was incredible.
Because you get sloppy with a burner account and start following someone that's going to tip off who you are. You know, then it's like, that's like your kid's friend, your kid's coach. It's like, why would this guy randomly be following Brian Colangelo's kid's coach?
Yeah, that's get that guy on tomorrow from Philly that dug that stuff up and tracked it, and we'll see how he can sniff out Patricia.
Yeah, it was with the Ringer, I think. I don't think that's the guy who's actually, you know, breaking this.
Who cares?
Story
we'll ask him how we track down Patricia.
Yeah, but the Twitter account is at Eddie P. Lions fan. It's just every tweet is coming to the defense of Patricia, and everyone else is a buffoon. Everyone else sucks. Matt Stafford, Bob Quinn, the GM, just everyone else is brutal, but Patricia is the greatest. And I love the burner account game. I love that we live in the burner account era. I'm so glad we get to be on the air during this era because it's totally unique to 2020, right?
Like, it's amazing. So one of the greatest players in the NBA admitted to having burner accounts, Kevin Durant. It's incredible.
Yep.
It's it's weird. It's really weird, though. It admits that that's that you care that much about it.
Right. Don't kid yourself. There you is a ton of them. There is a bunch of people that have burner accounts. I know for a fact.
I know for a fact as well. But it's one thing to have it just to follow along. It's another thing to actually be active.
Yeah, to be active.
To search, you know, for your name as a burner account and defend yourself under the guise of anonymity. I mean, it's crazy, right? It's crazy. Like, it really is, but it happens, and it's happened a lot. So Bobby Webster, in about 20 minutes, he's down there in Tampa with the team. Raptors are kicking off their camp, and Ray Ferraro will join us around 5:30. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. We get into the Pierre LeBrun piece in The Athletic today where he polled like 15 different coaches and scouts and executives throughout the league, non-Canadian teams, about how they project the all-Canadian division to play out, and some interesting answers in there. And the Leafs got a lot of love. So if you're in Toronto, I guess that's a positive. And beyond that, there was a variety of answers, you know, of how everyone sees it playing out, 1 through 7, outside of Ottawa being dead last. Right. Everyone's predicting that. But 1 through 6 could be a crapshoot once we get started.
I don't think Ottawa's going to be that bad.
I still think they'll be seventh, but I think what they're going to do is surprise teams. Yeah. Like they're going to be a tough out every night because they work hard. They're a better team.
That's not Atlanta back in the day where you just walk in there and take 2 points.
No. But I mean, on paper, compared to the other 6 teams, they are the 7th team in Canada, and I don't think anybody's denying that. But if Matt Murray turns back the clock a little bit, and you know, a guy like Dadonov, and you know, you look at Tkachuk another year under his belt, and you know, there's some players there that are at least going to compete every night, and you're seeing them take the step in the right direction.
But, well, and a team like that can really benefit from a shortened season as well. They get hot early and then just try to hold on for dear life. Anything can happen.
But
happened before.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt. My biggest thing is I keep coming back to the word spoiler. Like, they are going to take points off of some teams that they're playing against.
And
if you've got, let's say, you know, Montreal-Toronto battling, or Edmonton-Toronto, or, you know, you name it, any of these 6 teams that are battling for position in the standings, and you got to go into Ottawa for 3 games in a row. Like, you're not coming out of the 3-0. There's a chance that, you know, Ottawa's going to get points off of you. So that's my biggest concern is that's why I like it for the fans, but I don't like this for these 6 teams, because these 6 teams all should be playoff teams on paper.
I think they have absolutely the ability to do that, but that's what makes it that much more intriguing and unpredictable, is that there really could be any combination of 1 through 4 if we believe it's going to be the top 4 from each division that gets in.
Right.
And I think if you're in Toronto, there has not been a long history of playing Canadian teams in the playoffs, in large part because it's self-inflicted. The Leafs didn't make the playoffs for so many years. Right. But they haven't played a Canadian team since Ottawa, I guess, in 04. And they played Ottawa, it seemed like, every year for a number of years. But they didn't play any other Canadian teams. Then I think the last one they would have played in the playoffs would have been Vancouver in 94 in the semifinals.
Brian, you just talked about the divisions. You said the Canadian. Do you have any idea what the other divisions are?
I've seen a variety. I'm sure you guys have seen the same thing. I mean, it's mapped out a few different ways. I think we all know what the Western teams are going to look like, right? Like the California teams, Arizona will be in there, probably Colorado.
Yeah.
But then beyond that, I'm not sure how they're going to handle the kind of Midwest and into the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, you might see Detroit slide into that Central. Like that's the thing. So
Columbus,
it's got to go 8-8-8 and then 7 up north.
Yeah, I've seen Pittsburgh in there because they're in Western Pennsylvania, right? Like, they might technically be a little bit closer to the Midwest than the East Coast. So there's a variety of different looks, and we'll get into that more with Ray, and we'll get more into Pierre LeBrun's article and the polling and the projections for the All-Canadian roster. So Ray's coming up at 5:30. Bobby Webster at 5:05 from Tampa. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.